Good morning, and welcome to the New Life broadcast brought to you by the Emmanuel Baptist Church. We hope you'll listen in every Sunday at 9:30 on 93R. Emmanuel is located at 1710 23rd Street near the City Park in Parkersburg. If you have a question or desire more information, call us at 304-485-5171. Our website is www.ebcwv.com.
We're in a series that is dealing with some real issues that we all struggle with. It came to me as I was reading Matthew 19, and I realized that Jesus' words dealt with life. God created life, and that gave us a little take on abortion. Jesus' words dealt with gender. That God, we created male and female, and we've looked at the transgender issue, and then He gave us an outline for marriage, and we'll look at that today. And take a break next week. Sarah speaks, and then the week beyond that, we'll look at the issue of divorce. So all these are challenging, but important for us to think about. We're going to look at two scriptures, Genesis 2 and then Matthew 19, kind of in our core passage. What does Jesus say about marriage? He quotes Genesis 2, and I'll just read to you from Genesis 2:22. Then the Lord God made a woman from the rib He had taken out of the man, and He brought her to the man. And the man said, "This is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man. And that is why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. And Adam and his wife were both naked, and they felt no shame." Before we read the next passage, I just want to read a quote by Matthew Henry, a commentator from years past. He says, "Eve was not taken out of Adam's head to rule him, neither out of his feet to be trampled on by him, but out of his side to be equal to him, under his arm to be protected by him, and near his heart to be loved by him." I've always loved that quote. And then Matthew 19. When Jesus had finished saying these things, He left Galilee and He went into the region of Judea to the other side of the Jordan. Large crowds followed Him and He healed them there. Some Pharisees came to Him to test Him, and they asked, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason?" "Haven't you read," He replied, "that at the beginning the Creator made them male and female, and said, 'For this reason a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one. Therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate.'" Notice that Jesus is asked to talk about divorce, and instead He talks about marriage. I think that's significant. A few thoughts here is, notice that Jesus addresses these directly. He's not a commentator. He's the Creator, and so we need to listen to Him. All four of these issues that we've been dealing with are controversial and emotional, and therefore they tend to be avoided in churches, but we've been going right at them for the last few weeks. Christians will come to different conclusions on controversial issues. And so my goal is to be direct and honest, but also humble, knowing that you may come to a different conclusion or not like what I have to say. I also understand that these issues are personal. You have dealt with some of these things personally. And this particular topic of marriage can be a tough one. It can be a real positive thing for some of you, but one of the more difficult things that you've had to deal with in your life. And so I know these are personal. And also, I just want to say that I'm speaking on these issues as moral issues, and I do not have a political view or agenda that I'm trying to pass along. You might associate my views with a political agenda, but I am not. And so I've every week as we've gone through this series, I've shown you my triangle of truth. Christ is on the top. And that's where it all starts. Christ is the Creator. John 1, Colossians 1, all things were made through Him, by Him, for Him, and He holds all things together. So we go to Christ, and we experience forgiveness of sins. We come to know we have eternal life. Everything begins there. And then Christ opens up our eyes, and we begin to see that He is the Creator, and He has put into creation an order. It is as real as gravity, and it's woven into the fabric of the universe. It's summarized in the Ten Commandments and also in what Jesus has said about marriage and family. There is an order in the universe, and when you live according to it, things go well. When you live outside of it, things don't go so well for you. But a lot of people don't really connect with Christ or are not that interested in the created order. And so that means that we have to come at people with a great deal of compassion. And that means there's just people all around us that don't get it. They don't believe the way we do. They don't get it at all. And so we don't come at them and preach harder or get angry. We simply understand there's a lot of folks that are just outside of the kind of the biblical worldview. I put the A and the T up there because the A is to remind me of Augustine in my quote, "Thou hast made us for thyself, O God, and our hearts are restless until they rest in thee." I think that's a keeper. The T is for tension, and the idea that as we go through this, I think as we look at these issues, there is a tension as you hold on to Christ, as you realize there's a created order, but you also realize that there's a lot of folks that are outside of that, and I think you've got to hold on to all three of them. There's a tendency to let go of one of the corners so that the tension goes away. And for today's topic, I put RTRG. Jesus shares a radical truth, but he also shows radical grace. And I think that the power in the Christian message is Jesus said, this is the way it is, and I made it that way. And yet he hung out with people who didn't get it at all. Radical truth, radical grace. We have to be about that as well. So today we look at what Jesus has to say about marriage. And I don't mean to overlook the importance of those who are single. Jesus was single and celibate. Paul said, I wish that all people were single like myself, as he was at that time, because they can spend more time in the kingdom. And so I'm not trying to say that married love is somehow that much higher. In fact, the married love and eros goes away and agape continues. The friendship love continues. And so my thought is that our church needs to be a place where there is a loving fellowship and friendship for people that are single to experience a connection, but we also need to support and celebrate the marriages that are in our midst. So my first point is a good image for marriage is this idea of seasons. Every relationship, like life, is lived out in seasons. There are warm times of positive connection in a relationship or a marriage when the light of love shines around you and you bask in its glow. And then there are cold times when everything seems dark and dreary and you don't even know if you have the strength to make it through another day. The beauty of marriage over time is you're able to look back over the seasons and realize, man, even when things were tough, somehow we found a way to make it through. And then if you've been in a difficult marriage or relationship and you've had a season where you left it, we'll look at divorce and how we deal with that down the road. But my mom passed away in August of 2013 at age 84, and my parents had 64 years of marriage together, and like Dickens said, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, and yet at the end of it, they were there for each other. And they kind of gave me a lesson. I learned a lesson from my own parents that they hung in through good and bad, through different seasons. Mona and I got married. I was 21 and she was 20. I was 22 and she was 21. Is that right? Okay. It doesn't really matter. We were both clueless. You look back now and realize that we went into marriage not really knowing much of anything. And yet we were committed to Christ, and we were committed to each other, and we kind of figured we'd grow up together, and we did. And so there have been seasons. There have been really good times, and there have been really bad times. And I can tell you that if it weren't for our faith, we would not still be together, because you always find a time in a long season of marriage when you can walk away from it. It just would be easier to let it go. And you choose, because of your faith, to hang in, and the Lord then kind of blesses that. We'll celebrate our 41st anniversary in May, and it's been a journey. God is good, and we are blessed. I didn't want to show you this picture. I just came home this week, and there in the paper was a picture of Ernerl Leggett, and she married Otis Leggett back in December of 45, and they've been married 72 years. And I think they say that when you are around someone all the time, you look into your face and unconsciously you mimic their micro movements of their smile and their frown. And your face begins to look like their face. And I looked at this couple married 72 years, and do they not look like, kind of look like each other, or is that my imagination? The face you look into kind of changes your own face, and this fact keeps Mona awake at night. It's really concerning to her, but it is kind of neat that through the seasons, the face of the other person kind of can become our face. Marriage is a minefield. And by this, I mean all of us have different life experiences, some good, some horribly painful when it comes to marriage. Our goal as a church is to celebrate and encourage those who hang in, to support those who have fallen out, and to come alongside those who are not married and seek the friendship and the fellowship of our church. And then I would say that marriage not only is lived out in seasons. Marriage can be a minefield of emotions, good and bad. Marriage also has become a battlefield in our culture. I can't think of an issue in our culture that has changed more quickly or caused more conflict than what we know as the LGBTQ+ movement and all the ways that it has and is playing out in our culture. Let me just give you an incredibly brief historical review as it deals with the definition of marriage. Back in 1996, not that long ago, the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, passed by the Congress and was signed by Bill Clinton, banned federal recognition of same-sex marriage by limiting the definition of marriage to the union of one man and one woman. 1996, our Congress and Bill Clinton signed the idea of really said that marriage is to be a man and a woman in a committed relationship. 2015, the Supreme Court, in its Obergefell decision, ruled the fundamental right to marry is guaranteed to same-sex couples by due process and equal protection. So about 20 years later, complete reversal. And then just last year, the Respect for Marriage Act passed, and it repeals the Defense of Marriage Act from 1996 and requires that federal government recognize the validity of same-sex couples' marriage, and it protects religious liberties. Christians and churches have struggled to find a clear path forward in the midst of this cultural debate. And I'll just offer you a few very brief observations. One is, it's amazing that within our law, we actually codified a religious definition of marriage. It shows that our founders had kind of a Judeo-Christian understanding, and a religious definition of marriage was in our law, a man and a woman in a committed relationship for life. As a pluralistic, diverse country, we have pulled back from that. We've pulled back from seeing life from a biblical lens, and so the country has pulled back from the definition that was in law. We can get so focused on the battle that we forget the people involved. And so here's one take I have, is in my study and experience, same-sex attraction seems to be something that starts young and remains in a person over time. And I read and reread some chapters this week. We honestly do not know what ultimately causes someone to be heterosexual or someone to have same-sex attraction. They've done biological studies. They've done hormonal studies. They've done genetic studies. And I reread it to see, is it really the consensus? And the consensus is, we don't know. But it is real. It's not something that someone necessarily chooses. It just is. And a lot of people have it when they're young, and it will stay with them for life. There's nothing sinful about an orientation. We all have different orientations which we have to take to God. You may be struggling and looking at sexual images that affect how you view relationships and marriage. That may be something that was in you from a young age. You've got to take that to the Lord. You may be in a relationship and you're looking outside of it. Maybe someone else you think could fulfill you more. That would be something that maybe was in you from a young age, and you're going to have to take that to the Lord. And on it goes. All of us have to take our life before God and ask for what His His will is. Personally, I could not perform a gay wedding. I don't feel that a lesbian or a gay wedding would fit what my understanding of biblical marriage is. So I couldn't perform one. But if that couple asked me, would I attend? Would I go to their service? My answer would be yes, because my concern for them goes beyond our view of marriage. And they may differ with me on marriage, but I love them as a person, and I care about them and their life, and that's a big part of their life. And so I will be involved with them, and I will care about them no matter what they choose to do. And my hope is I would live such a consistent life of love and grace that they would be drawn back to Christ. And in the end, only Christ is going to change you or me. Okay? We're not going to be changed by us arguing about theology. We're going to be changed by us going back to Christ and saying, God, what do you want in my life? And by the way, each one of us does that first before we go to anyone else and try to fix them. The church needs to look at itself and say, God, you need to work in me. I've got some orientations that need fixed. You fix me, and then I'll come alongside others. And so I have a quote here that I've always loved by Madeleine L'Engle, and I think it's there. We do not draw people to Christ by loudly discrediting what they believe, by telling them how wrong they are and how right we are, but by showing them a light that is so lovely that they want with all their heart to know the source of it. We don't change people by arguing with them. We change people by showing them a light that is so lovely, a love that is so overwhelming that they want with all their heart to know the source of it. Jesus was amazingly clear about what marriage is, radical truth, but he was amazingly loving toward everyone, whether they agreed with him or not. And that's where I am. There is an order, but there's also compassion. And there's a tension in that. There is a tension in that. It'd be easy for me to let something go, but I'm not going to let it go, because my Lord has told me what's true, and I believe it. But my Lord has also modeled for me this amazing compassion, and that is what changed my heart, and that's what can change anybody's heart. So, moving on, what does Jesus say about marriage? Well, I think he speaks pretty clearly. We've read the passage in Matthew 19, and he has given us, I think, kind of a roadmap. Last week we looked at the transgender debate, and I gave you some reasons we celebrate gender. And as we think about marriage, Jesus is saying we're created male and female come together in a one flesh union. One thing about gender that we celebrate is that having a man and a woman together reveals something about the character of God. God is a diverse unity who lives in a loving fellowship within the Trinity and is capable of producing life. And so what did he create? He created a man and a woman who have the ability to come together in a loving fellowship of marriage, two becoming one, and are capable of producing life. There is something about the very character of God that we see in how he made us, male and female. And male and female complement one another. I've told you that because I've married Damona, she has helped me to become a better, deeper, kinder, more social person. I would never be that without her. There's something about men and women who come together open to God, and there are changes that happen. And then I think gender also speaks to our longing for connection. Gender points us to this idea that we're going to be fulfilled one day. When Adam saw Eve, he said, wow, this is it. And when we see Jesus, we'll say, oh, wow, this is it. Tyson writes, to be human is to experience a longing for completion. It is not good for man to be alone in this journey. So God created woman and marriage as a place where we could learn to and to serve and to love and to find a deep one flesh connection. And so we celebrate what Jesus said was made good. And it says the two become one. And that word means glued together. It means cemented. It means strong, because so much is going to rest on whether or not that man and woman can stay together. So another thought about marriage is this. Marriage is a model. Marriage is a model or a symbol of a deeper reality. Just hold that up there, because I've got 2 points on that slide. Marriage is a model or a symbol of a deeper reality. After God made marriage, he then envisioned our relationship with him as a marriage relationship. So in the Old Testament, he calls people in every age to be faithful, to not commit adultery with false gods and idols. And then God's people are to call to marry a person who shares their faith in God. In the New Testament, it says, don't be unequally yoked. And then in the New Testament, Jesus begins his ministry by doing a miracle at a wedding in Cana. And then Jesus pictured his believers as his bride, and he is the groom willing to die to present them holy. And then history will be consummated by the great marriage supper where God's family will feast and celebrate forever. And so marriage is a model and symbol of the close, intimate relationship that God desires with every person that he has created. But then he says in Luke 20, but in heaven, we will not marry nor be given in marriage. And so the sacrificial love that we have learned and lived out in marriage on earth will be focused fully and completely on God in heaven. As John Tyson writes, in Genesis 1 and 2, the Bible opens up with a woman and a man. In Revelation 21 and 22, the Bible closes with a woman and a man. The Bible opens with a wedding and ends with a wedding, opens with a marriage and ends with a marriage. Our Bible is essentially a love story. So I like the fact that within marriage, you are losing yourself in service to another person. And that love that you're learning, that you've learned within marriage, ultimately is going to be find its fulfillment when you see Jesus face to face. And whether or not your marriage carried on, or whether or not you've been divorced, you have learned about love through that relationship, and you're a better, deeper person. Now, Ephesians 5 is a reminder of how God uses marriage in our life. By the way, in our culture, marriage is seen as a way of getting our needs met, whereas marriage is God's way of showing us how to lose our life in service to another. Ephesians 5 says that we are to submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. We are to submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. The man is to love the woman as Christ loved the church. And how did Christ love the church? He died for her to present her holy and pure before God. And so men, in marriage, you are supposed to be willing to set aside your pride, set aside your ego, and you are to love your wife with a sacrificial love, just like Jesus was willing to sacrifice for his church and offer up his life. And you are to live your life in such a way that you have a spiritual or a sanctifying love for your wife. And that means that you are to focus your family on spiritual things. This is the ideal. And then women, you are to submit to your husbands and respect him as he tries to love you fully and deeply in the Lord. That is the biblical ideal. And Paul says, this is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ and the church. Marriage is a preview of coming attractions. Our marriage relationships are preparing us for that day when we will see Christ face to face and join him at the wedding supper of the Lamb. John in Revelation 21 sees heaven as a place where the bride, the church, will be finally united with the groom, Jesus. He'll wipe every tear from our eyes, and there'll be no more death or mourning or crying or pain. And for the old order of things has passed away. He who is seated on the throne is making all things new. So imagine you're at a movie theater and you look up, and there on the screen are images of your life and marriage, like the montage from Up. And you see the early days, and you see the middle days, and then you see the later days, and then suddenly it morphs into this picture of heaven, and you stop seeing that other person, and you begin to see the face of Jesus, and it comes towards you, and suddenly you see the throne behind them, and you see the Spirit over here, and suddenly you realize everything in this life that happened within your marriage was preparing you for that perfect love that you'll see when Jesus looks at you face to face. That's the beauty and the blessing of marriage and what God meant for it to be. We could go on, but I want to share just a few other quick thoughts. Marriage is where we learn to love. 1 Corinthians 13 says, love is patient. Love is kind. It doesn't envy. It doesn't boast. Love's not proud. It's not rude or self-seeking. Love's not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Always protects. It always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. Something I've told every couple I've ever married is that love is more than a feeling. Love's a powerful feeling, but it's more than a feeling. Love is a commitment. And within a marriage, and Ashley and Mason were in the first service, and they're getting married in just a couple of days. And I looked out at them, and I said, just a couple of days, I'm going to ask you to take a ring and put it on their finger. And that ring symbolizes that you're going to love that person in the good days and the bad days, whether you feel like it or not. It's a powerful symbol. Love's not just a feeling. It's a commitment. It's an action. Now, I know I'm looking out at a lot of you, and you were there. You gave it all you had. You loved in every way you could, and still the relationship ended. And I can't answer that. We'll get to that in the last sermon, but I do know that there is no pain wasted in the kingdom. Every struggle, every suffering that you've gone through, God has used in your life to develop your character and make you desire Him even more. There's a story that I love. I've told many times. A couple was kind of struggling in there. They had a lot of things going on. They finally said, let's just get it out. Let's just lay it out. And they both took a sheet of paper. And you write down what you don't like about me, and I'll write down what I don't like about you. And they were at the table, and they said, okay, go. They gave them 2 minutes, 3 minutes. And so one of them would write and look up, and the other one would write. And they'd go back and forth, back and forth. And finally, they were done writing, and they slid the papers across the table to each other. And the man, as soon as he looked at it, tried to grab for his to get his back because over and over again, his wife had written, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. In other words, I could have written down all your faults and your failures, but I love you in spite of it all, and we're gonna make it work. We're gonna do everything we can to make it work. That's the power of a biblical love that you can find. And by the way, we need to remember that you're not going to marry it. You don't marry a god, you marry a sinner. So if you're expecting a person to do what only God can do, you are always going to be frustrated. Okay, we marry a human. We marry a person who's capable of great good and horrible evil. And so sometimes I talk to young couples, and they say, oh, this is going to be wonderful. All my greatest desires are going to be fulfilled in this. And I think, well, okay, after 41 years, you better think about that again. Okay, it's going to be, I tell people in the marriages that I do, it's going to be a struggle. Unless you let God be God in your life, you can't let the person you're married to be human, okay? If you don't let God be God in your life and find your fulfillment ultimately in God, you're always going to be frustrated because you're going to be thinking this person's going to fulfill you, and sometimes they will and sometimes they won't. And so you better find your deepest fulfillment in someone else. And I think a lot of you know that. And so I think Jesus is inviting everyone to the wedding supper of the Lamb. And how do I know that? What does Jesus say in Revelation 3? Here I am, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone opens the door, what does he say? I'll come in and we will share a meal. What meal is he talking about? I wonder if he's talking about the wedding supper of the Lamb. You come in, you let me into your heart, and we will share lunch today, but ultimately we're going to share that final wedding supper of the Lamb with the heavenly host singing praises to God. We celebrate those who hang in. We support those who fall out. Every Tuesday night, there's a divorce care group at our church where they're talking about the struggle of dealing with divorce. And then we share loving friendship and fellowship with everyone. If you're single, you may not be married, but you come here and this is your family. This is where you find support and love and friendship, all of which is a kind of love which goes on forever. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the New Life broadcast brought to you by the Emmanuel Baptist Church. Emmanuel is located at 1710 23rd Street near the City Park in Parkersburg, West Virginia. Our website is www.ebcwv.com. I'm Pastor Kurt Busick. We leave you with this important word from the Bible. For God so loved the world that he gave us his only Son, that whoever believes in him will not perish but have eternal life. God bless you and have a great Sunday.